It be your boy, we gon' be. It be your boy, baby B. Yeah. Y'all know how I do every Tuesday from 10 a.m. to noon with the house party. I'm gonna say shout out to Kid Swoop for calling in. Man, I love his music. Beach Vibes, I dropped everything 2 times. Shout out to everybody that tuned in to the house party. Shout out to all the WHO follower listeners who always tune in to check out the house party. Shout out to my sister Promo God. Shout out to everybody on my live. Shout out to my sister Chelsea. What's up? I should say Chelsea is the new representative for the house party. So whenever y'all need interviews or music played in the house party, hit up Chelsea. Let's see who's on my live. Shout out to everybody on my live. Somebody asked who was the level up song. That was Yundi the Champion. I had him on last week. Shout out to Chelsea. Shout out to Floyd. Kelvin, what's up? Herb Chapman, what's up? Shout out to let's see. Shout out to our DJ Carolyn. She's on my live. Shout out to Christina. Shout out to Promo God. Shout out to everybody that support the house party. Kid, what's up? I see you. Supremacy Stacks. Deshaun Armstrong, what's up? Shout out to Chris. Shout out to Taylor. Shout out to Chris from Team Money Hungry. I see you, big bro. Shout out to Terry Martin, what's up? Shout out to Ollie McMillan Jr. Or Ollie McMillan, I'm just gonna say that. I need to be careful how I pronounce these names. Ollie is one of my supervisors. I don't wanna go to work and be in some trouble. So y'all know I do the house party every Tuesday, 10 a.m. to noon. And I have fun during the house party with y'all. I'll be back next week, same time, same place. Y'all can follow me on Instagram, WHFR_babyB. Until next week, I'm out. Peace.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
Good afternoon. This is Betty Daniels from Fourth Tuesday, and we're going to be hearing both the pre-election campaign and the post-election results of Proposal 2. In October of last year, Katie Fahey, who was the chairperson who spearheaded the actually getting the proposal on the ballot, shared with us some history and background of gerrymandering. Following that particular review and introduction, we will then go into the results of the proposal 2 being passed and what are the next steps in operationalizing voters, not politicians. And now let's begin with the review of what Proposal 2 was about, how it came about, and then we will have the victory speech, if you will. So now, here's Ms. Fahey. You are listening to WHFR Dearborn. The following is a pre-recorded program and does not reflect the views of WHFR staff or Henry Ford College staff and members.
Hi, glad to be here. I am Katie Fahey. I am the founder and executive director of Voters Not Politicians, the organization heading up Prop 2 in this election.
All right. Now, Propositional 2, when I look it up on the, do a little research, it covers a lot of territories. Why don't you kind of give us a background of how Proposal 2 came to be and what's your involvement with that? Maybe that can help us out a little bit.
Yeah, so Proposal 2 covers redistricting. When we go and vote, you obviously vote for your state senator, your state house member, your congressional member. But once every 10 years after the census, the line for which communities get which representative actually change. Right now, those lines change by the people who are actually running in those elections, our elected officials, our politicians. It often happens behind closed doors with special interests and lobbyists and virtually no public input. And what happens when the politicians are getting to pick and choose whether they want you to be their voter or not is they often try and stack the deck for themselves and make it so that we have non-competitive elections or they can guarantee who's going to win.
Okay, go ahead. Now, I'm kind of like jumping in here. How did all this, now, is that part of what we call gerrymandering? And how did it get to be such a prevalent, and why is it now to a point we need a proposal to address it? What's going on here?
Yeah, so that is called gerrymandering. Gerrymandering is when these district lines are drawn by politicians for their own benefit or for a political party's benefit.
Okay.
And it's actually been a term that's been around for a really long time. There's also racial gerrymandering, which is when people are trying to suppress minority votes. They're drawing the lines to try and make it harder for people to elect a person of color.
Mm-hmm.
And why it's getting so bad recently is there's just so much more data on us. Every website you go on, the credit card purchases you have, all of those little information points, we already know that political campaigns use that to try and target us and feed us custom ads. But all of that data is now being used to draw those lines too. So they're literally going through, one neighborhood and trying to guess, okay, these houses vote this way, these houses vote that way. I either want them because I like the way they vote or don't want them because I don't like the way they vote.
Okay. Now, I guess I'm trying to, putting myself in the place of, of the normal voter. And I guess I could say I'm the, whatever that means. Okay.
Yeah.
Why would that, I'm just going to the polls. I hear see a proposal two. Why should I be so concerned about proposal two? And what is a yes? What does a yes vote do? What does a no vote do? So first, let's go about, the person going to the poll.
Yeah.
Okay. What is proposal?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the proposal two is really going to try and add accountability to our voting process again.
All right.
If you've ever felt like, you really care about an issue, you feel like it's really popular, maybe something common sense like guaranteeing we have clean water,
mm-hmm.
or that our roads aren't filled with potholes,
mm-hmm.
and you wonder why those things don't happen right now, it really is because of gerrymandering. Gerrymandering has led to non-competitive elections in Michigan. It's also led to the way people voting not actually ending up with who is winning our election.
All right.
We have a state where about 50% of the people vote for Democrats, about 50% of the people vote for Republicans, yet depending which party is gerrymandered the state, one party can have 70% of the seats, so they don't even need to compromise, even though the people of Michigan are voting one way.
Okay.
So if you care about your vote and you care about it actually having an impact, your politician wanting to win that vote, we have to change this process so that the politicians aren't calculating, who they want their voters to be, because then they aren't accountable to us. They're accountable to the special interests and the lobbyists who are paying for them to run their election campaign. Really, the whole reason we vote is so that we can elect people we like, but also unelect people that we don't like.
All right. So when did gerrymandering become a rule and not when did it become the norm and not an exception, I guess, am I saying that right?
Yeah, it's a great question. Gerrymandering has actually been around since the beginning of our revolution. Elbridge Gerry, who was he signed the Declaration of Independence and was mm-hmm. a vice president, but he was also the governor of Massachusetts, and when Massachusetts was getting redistricted, he was the one who approved the maps, and one of the maps looked so crazy that people said it looked like a salamander.
All right.
And because he was the governor, people ended up calling it a gerrymander. So the term comes back from way, way, way a long time ago. But the amount of data that now is on people makes it so that it's basically surgically precise. They're really getting in so that they're locking in 10 years worth of elections at a time, because these maps are only drawn once every 10 years, which makes it so that you really have non-changing seats, and the only thing that has changed them is whoever happened to win the election right before those lines were drawn.
So who applies the gerrymandering? Who what process, a bunch of questions come, let me slow down a little bit. Then gerrymandering or the application can change from election to elections, is that correct?
Yeah, so whichever political party happens to win that election, this upcoming election is one of those elections. If they have the majority, even though it's only in one election cycle, then they really get to draw the line. So in Michigan, how it works is our legislature will have a committee with the majority party and draw up the lines and then shove it through for a vote, and then the governor gets a veto power or not. But, if the governor vetoes it, then it goes to our Michigan Supreme Court. Which is partisan, a lot of people think. So not every state, though, has politicians in charge of this. And actually, there's 6 states that have something like Proposal 2 suggests, which is a commission of citizens who would draw these lines, where they're actually required to compromise, and they have Democrats, Republicans, independents, and third-party voters all at the same table.
All right.
They're doing it out in the open, unlike the status quo. And there's about 13 other states who also have some kind of combination of politicians and citizens. But Michigan's kind of especially corrupt, where we have the congressional seats, state house seats, and state senate seats all being drawn by the people who are running in those seats, just by the politicians.
All
which
right.
also leads to a large incumbency problem. So if I'm in office, and let's say you're trying to run for my seat, but I am the one who is in office, if I can look up your address and where you live about 3 months before the election, I can draw you right out of the district, so you have to go run a race somewhere else, or I can run an attack ad against you saying that you don't even live in the district you're running for. And that's just, I think a lot of people see that as a conflict of interest and like it's not fair. That's why we have, some people who keep getting elected, even though other people don't want them in office.
All right. Then, okay, so if I'm hearing you correctly again, then it might be used by one party one time, another party another time. Can it also be an individual type of thing? I think that's what I just heard you say. Okay.
Yeah, so Democrats can do it, Republicans, but also, even if one politician is the head of that committee and doesn't like somebody else, maybe they aren't, they didn't do them a favor or something. You have the same party trying to kick out other people in their party that they don't like working with.
Okay. All right. Okay. Then, I'm looking at your website and stuff, and you have the different categories of proposal two addresses fairness, impartiality, and transparency. The fairness of proposal, all right, and what is the voters, not politicians, position on proposal two? What is your position, yes or no, for you?
Yes, we definitely want it to pass. We actually took time to go out and survey thousands of people across Michigan and ask them, do you like that politicians draw these lines, or do you think there's a better way? And this constitutional language really has been written with thousands of people's input. And then we had to gather almost 500,000 signatures to even get it placed onto the ballot. And we really think that it's something that's for and by the people of the state, that puts voters at the center of this and has it so that voters are choosing their politicians and stopping politicians being able to choose who they want their voters to be.
Okay. What people are there pros and cons to proposal two?
I think the only con would be that politicians no longer can rig the system. But depending on if you are a politician or not, I think is the only way that you can be against it. They will be losing power, but in a lot of ways, they haven't been respecting that. Our politicians, there's been over 11 different bills adopted that have never been brought up for a vote trying to change the system. And it's only ever been adopted, when Democrats have been in charge, and then the Republicans are trying to bring a bill. When the Republicans are in charge, and the Democrats bring, it's clearly not in the politician's self-interest to give themselves less power, and that's exactly why it has to come from the people.
Okay.
And I think, we're trying to really make it so that this process is focused on the things you mentioned, fairness, an impartial system where, again, the voters are put first, so that how the people in Michigan vote should be how we actually elect people. Mm-hmm. And then transparency is another huge part. No more behind the doors, closed doors sessions. Big problem with right now is there's a lawsuit that the League of Women Voters is bringing against the current set of maps. Mm-hmm. And there's emails coming out 8 years after these lines have been drawn where they are calling constituents, garbage because they didn't vote the way that they wanted them to. And this commission will have to only be able to hold meetings. Every email will be made available as they're being written, which I think just adds more accountability into the system so that we're not finding out 8 years later.
All right. Now, proposal two, the yes vote, and it's carried. Then what happens after that? Go ahead.
In 2020, when the census is being done, an application will actually be open for the citizens of Michigan to be able to apply to be on this commission.
Okay.
It'll be a 13-member commission with four Democrats, four Republicans, and then five people who are independents or third-party voters.
All right.
As long as you don't have a conflict of interest, if you're not a registered lobbyist or a elected partisan official or very closely related to them, then you'll be able to apply. There'll be a lottery to make sure that we have a diverse group of people who can listen to the people of the state. And that commission will have to go hold hearings across the state to listen to how people think that their community looks, saying, you know, I think that this neighborhood has a lot in common with this neighborhood and we'd like a representative together. Mm-hmm. And then the lines will be drawn. Mm-hmm. The commission will have to go back out, make sure everybody knows. Everybody will be able to publicly comment on it. Mm-hmm. They'll have to redraw the lines, most likely, because people will probably have a lot of feedback. Mm-hmm. And then those maps will be adopted for the 2022 election.
All right. I'm not trying to be redundant, and hope I'm just want to make sure I'm clearly understanding you. So the proposal, the yes has, and it has passed. Then they set up the commission. So anyone who is interested and there's not a conflict of interest can put their name. So are they voted upon? Are they appointed? How are these 13 people determined?
Yeah, you'll have to be a registered voter to apply, but that's the only criteria.
You apply.
And then it's a two-part lottery system. So the Secretary of State will make sure nobody was lying on their application so that everybody's qualified.
Okay.
And then they'll do a lottery to make sure that we have about 200 people. There'll be another kind of revision through the majority and minority leader in the State House and State Senate. So they'll be looking again to see, you know, who maybe is too partisan to be serving on this.
All right.
And then there'll be a final lottery matching our, you know, weighted for the statistics of our state so that you have a couple of people from Wayne County, a couple of people from the west side, the middle of the state, northern Michigan. You have different age ranges, different economic incomes on that commission to make sure it's really reflective like the people of the state.
All right. So I'm just trying to give a feedback and make sure I'm understanding this. So when they were setting up the commission, people will make an application and then it's like a lottery kind of thing. It's like people do, you pull names. All right. It's like first you had to people apply for the position. Then there is a vetting, if I'm using that word correctly.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. Of all the people whose names have applied. Did I hear you say the minority leader or who pulls the names?
Majority and minority leader, yes.
Okay.
Of the House and the Senate.
All right. So they take turns. Pulling each one gets so many pulls, that kind of like an album, like a selector jury type of thing?
Yeah, exactly. They have some strikes. They can strike up to 10% of the applicant pool if they feel like they aren't qualified to serve.
All right. Okay. And then, there has to be a mix of Republicans, Democrats, and then five other people?
Yep. Independent or third party voters.
Okay. So are the people then in the poll in that group, they have to identify whether they're Democratic or Republican. Is that correct?
Uh-huh.
All right. And then you also have people who say they are independent, yada, yada, yada. Correct?
Yep.
All right. And so then you have like three bowls, Democrat, Republicans, and nonpartisan. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. All right. And then so... the majority leader gets to pull the most number, or how's it that, you know, after you get the four and four from each party, who then gets the, you know, determines that odd person out? Which person gets it?
No, that's all through the lottery. So actually no one person gets to choose who these people are. It'll be, that's really because we don't really have an official who isn't partisan in Michigan.
That was my question. That was what I was trying to understand. Yeah. Okay. All right. So it's almost like their names just drop down, like the lottery kind of goes, and their name drops down.
Yeah.
Okay. So that is the random selection process. Okay. And the commission then will draft rules and guidelines will be already set up for them.
They have guidelines. They'll be able to do some operating guidelines, but how to draw the lines, there's things like equal population, respecting existing community boundaries, making sure that one party or person cannot be favored or disfavored based on a political stance. And they'll have to go and hold some meetings. And then actually a really important part too is that before any map can be adopted, you need at least two of those Democrats, two of the Republicans, and two of the independent or third party voters to all agree. So you actually force compromise. But what you see in other states is that it's pretty easy. None of these commissioners are really there because they want to be. They want to be making sure that this is a process done with integrity instead of with the gerrymandering like happens right now. And so you get that compromise, and then they go out to the people and make sure that the voters in Michigan like it too.
All right. I guess now my next question is, you know, what happened to, you know, the district courts? You know, the district courts serve a certain amount of, you know, certain district, a certain community, you know, mayors serve. How much does this new commission reflect that reality, I guess? You know, will this new commission...
Of the other types of districts in Michigan?
Yes.
Yeah, so they won't directly impact it, but if the community feels like that's a good standard, then out of the public hearings they hold, they can come and say that. So, for example, we have one school district in Michigan that currently has 6 different House members in it. And so, you know, and I think that's the West Bloomfield School District. So if the people who live there want to come to that commission and say, look, we don't want to have to go talk to 6 different people when we want to advocate for our school. We want A1, ideally, and here's how we would draw the lines. That's where that commission can take that into account.
Okay. What do you think is going to be the most, the learning curve for the voter with this new commission? What's going to be his learning curve as to when this, as the commission starts to operate? How are they going to see the results of what this commission is doing for them?
Yeah, well, so in the constitutional language, we actually require that the commission has to give ample public notice about these meetings going on. Organizations like Voters Not Politicians, and I think a lot of other good governance groups in the state will also be making sure that people understand that they could go and show up to these meetings, or that they could even watch online or comment online. Because the biggest thing is we want to make sure people can actually participate. We want it to be an easy thing to partake in. And so the language reflects that too, saying that they have to give at least 45 days notice before any meeting, make sure that they have a big enough space for as many people to attend, make sure that digitally people can attend. And that'll really probably be the biggest thing, because this is a process that right now has only been controlled by those already in power. So it'll be a brand new system, but it's a really exciting opportunity for us to, like, for once to actually be involved in these lines that will dictate 10 years of elections at a time.
All right. So if I'm hearing you correctly again, then the success of this, the new commission, would be as to how much involvement the voters are in this commission. It's like, you know, at the public hearings, are they showing out? Are they, you know, making their voice heard? Is that what's going to be the grading of whether or not how effective the commission is or not?
Oh, no, I don't think so. Sorry, I misunderstood, I think.
No, it's a new question. Okay.
Oh, it's a new question. Okay. Yeah, you know, I think that this is really about changing the process.
Okay.
A lot of people are cynical about politics right now. They don't trust the political system. And we want to make sure that this is a process that has integrity, that will be fair, that will bring everybody to the table, to make it impartial, to letting one party, you know, benefit on the backs of another party. And we really want it to be transparent. And so I think if this is successful, it'll do that. But it will also lead to maps that reflect the will of the voters, when right now that isn't happening. You have, again, 50% of the people voting one way, 50% of the people voting another way, yet the representation is skewed, so that the things that a lot of us feel passionately about, the things we feel like are common sense, continue to not happen. So this commission will be successful if, you know, they have a fair, impartial, transparent system, and we lead to maps that actually reflect the will of the people.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener supported, non-commercial radio.
Hi, this is Mike from Slumberland Records. I've always loved and appreciated college radio stations such as WHFR because they are one of the few places where you can hear a genuinely wide variety of music selected by people who are as passionate about it as you are. When I first started getting interested in underground music, college radio was a crucial, complementary part of a discovery mechanism that included fanzines and haunting the local record shops. While the internet has definitely changed all of that a little bit, when it comes to a source for new, and new to you, music from people who are an integral part of the local community, you really can't top college radio stations like WHFR.
Welcome back, and now we will hear from Katie Fahey following the approval and passing of Proposal 2. Good afternoon. This is Betty Daniels from Impact Fourth Tuesday, and I have on the line with me Katie, who was part of the effort to put forth the Voters Not Politicians on the December ballot, and as we know, that it was approved. So Katie, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what's going on.
Hello, yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm Katie Fahey. I'm the founder and executive director of Voters Not Politicians. And we thankfully, on Election Day, successfully passed the Independent Citizens Redistricting Commission here in Michigan so that in 2020, when we're redrawing the district lines that dictate who our congressional members, state Senate members, state House members are, voters and not politicians will be in charge of those decisions.
All right. Now, Katie, looking at the ballot, it passed by 61%. All right. Was that what you anticipated, or did you think it was going to be closer, or what?
Yeah, we were really glad to see that. We weren't surprised. It was really good to see. You know, our opposition had come out with some ads really late that were direct lies, so we're really glad that people saw past those. But wherever we were across the state of Michigan, when we were talking to Democrats, Republicans, independents, people, you know, in rural counties or more urban counties, you know, a lot of people are upset with the state of politics. Mm-hmm. And they really want to end some of that corruption. And I think that seeing that we could change some of these systemic reasons why our government fails us was really exciting to a lot of people.
All right. So now that, you know, people do things in a fervor, you know, and masses are somewhat fickle. Okay, they'll be applauding you in the day, but then next, you know, if you don't do things exactly technically like they expected, you start getting some pushback. What are some of the, buyer's remorse kind of things that you think you may have to meet as this goes along from here? Are you understanding what my question is?
Yeah. I think, you know, as long as people participate in the process, I don't think that we'll have problems.
Okay.
A big part of this policy was like making sure that the public could participate, that people could not only attend these meetings, but apply to be on the commission, could watch online. And I think as long as we do a good job helping people know that they can do that and people participate, I actually think they'll be really happy and surprised with how thoughtful these commissioners will end up being.
All right. Now, the current gerrymandering that, you know, that occurred during this election, how will that be impacted? Can you tell us?
Yeah. So right, the status quo previously was, so our lines have been drawn in a way before where the politicians who are running for office, whichever party happens to be in control, actually gets to draw their own lines.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was in office and you were running against me and I like knew where you lived, I could actually draw you out of the district. So you'd have to go run in a different district.
So
it's pretty crazy.
Okay. So what do you think that they're going to be doing now that this proposal has been approved? Because like right now they are in office because of the gerrymandering.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Instead of the politicians drawing their own lines, we actually are going to have a 13-member commission of regular citizens from across the state. They actually can't be elected partisan politicians or registered lobbyists. They should be, you know, representative of the state. So, you know, people of different economic incomes, different races, different political beliefs coming together to draw these lines together, and they have really strict rules that they'll have to follow that guarantees that, you know, one party can't have an advantage, and that how these lines are drawn should actually represent the communities of Michigan as well as how the people of Michigan vote.
Okay, so but now the ones, the what I was getting at was that the ones who were elected as a result of the existing gerrymandering process, when will they feel the impact of the new gerrymandering system? That was the question I was trying to get to. So,
got it. Yeah. Okay. So these lines get redrawn once every 10 years after the census. The next census is in 2020, where they'll count up the whole population of Michigan so we can make sure that the numbers we're using to redraw these lines are accurate. Mm-hmm. So the lines will be redrawn in 2021, and the first election where they will be used is 2022.
All right. Now, is there going to be some type of voter education, I guess is might be a way of saying it, so that the voters will say, well, wait a minute, we voted for changes and these people are still doing this kind of thing. So is there going to be some things of voter education so that people can know that, okay, this is going on right now, but this is what you can look forward to?
Yeah, I know that Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson is very active and interested in doing that, but so is voters, not politicians. And actually, if anybody out there wants to help make sure their community or friends and family know about this, or maybe they're part of an organization that wants to make sure that their members know about this, at votersnotpoliticians.com, people can sign up. But our organization is going to be championing making sure people know that they can apply for the commission, making sure that they know that they can go and attend those meetings, and also making sure that people know how they can go and talk about their community in an effective way so that the commissioners can use that information when drawing the lines. The really crazy part is, like, for the first time, this process, which normally is controlled by only a couple people, will be opened up to millions of Michiganders to be able to participate. So we want to make sure that we're helping people understand how, because we've never had this opportunity before.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that fact that, you know, Jocelyn, Mrs. Johnson, I can get her title correctly, because there were so many different new women, which is another kind of landmark kind of thing that happened this past election. What will the election official position or their impact, you know, involvement in this process? Will they have to be, you know, make sure that, you know, certain information is gotten out? I mean, is it going to be a collaborative effort between you and them, or are you going to just be is your organization going to be spearheaded? I think I heard you say that you're going to be doing spearheading a lot of it. So is it going to be a collaborative effort between you and the state, the official state?
We certainly hope so. Yeah. And I believe the Secretary of State's office has, you know, led it to believe that, you know, they're going to lead with integrity. Really, their part is making sure that applications will be available and also making sure that it's advertised and people know about this opportunity to apply. Mm-hmm. The commission will act and operate completely independently, but technically they'll be housed in the Secretary of State's office.
Okay, which was part of the issue in the first place about the independent functioning of the commission, correct?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah. And that's why we want to make sure they can operate differently. Just technically, again, like where their budget will come from and stuff is housed under the Secretary of State. But they have all of that guaranteed in this constitutional amendment, which is why it was so important that we voted it in and included all those details in the proposal that got passed.
Yes. Now, I noticed that, you know, prior to the election, there were a lot of court challenges and things like that that went through, you know, trying to first not even get it on the ballot and then other kinds of things like that. Are there still some court opposition or challenges that you have to fine to and, you know, put in its place now after the election?
Yeah, right now there isn't, which is really great. We did make it past the Michigan Supreme Court before putting this on the ballot.
Okay.
And so we are excited to be there and hope that this will just continue to work and people will be able to apply and use the commission.
Okay. All right. Now, now from your point of view, because I know you have to prepare for the census and all that kind of stuff, what are some of the things that your organization will be working on getting ready for, you know, when the census goes through, that type of thing? I know you do, we got the, you know, commissioners and stuff to do. What are some of the other things that you'll be working on trying, you know, coming up with the 2020 process?
Yeah, there's a lot of really great organizations that'll be really focused on the census, which means that we want to make sure everybody in Michigan is counted.
Okay.
You know, that takes into account people who are going to help collect those numbers, but especially, you know, there's some populations that are harder to count than others.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to make sure that each of those hard to reach populations is still counted, because a lot of government funding from the national level, even on the in-state level, also derives from like how many people your state or your city has.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to make sure that that's accurate for that. But we also want to make sure it's accurate for drawing these lines for redistricting, so that when we even create that commission, it's actually representative. Because if we don't have an accurate kind of, you know, who is in our state, then we can't really know if it's accurate or not for representation.
Will that mean that your body will be involved in trying to help assist, you know, the census taking process? I know these people, they ask, you know, the census, it used to be, you know, people go to door to door. Now there's a lot of mail in. And mm-hmm. one of the challenges was is that that mail in thing, you lose a lot of people because not everybody will respond to the mail in. Well,
yeah. I think we're hoping to definitely help with that process, help with education around it and getting more awareness out there. You know, we might help with going door to door to try and educate people. Some of that's still being decided based on like what other great organizations in the state of Michigan are doing and where we need help. But mm-hmm. I think one thing we were really good at is we have volunteers in all 83 Michigan counties.
Okay.
And so, you know, if there's less bodies somewhere, can we try and, you know, reach out to people and let them know that this is an opportunity to help make sure everybody's counted.
Okay. Now, I see here that the legislature has to vote money for the commission. Is that a hurdle that you think you're going to have to, challenge, you know, with all these different things going on?
Part of how we worded it was that it would be equal to 25% of the Secretary of State's budget.
Okay.
So as long as the government doesn't like severely underfund that, which we certainly hope that they don't, because it would really impact, you know, our ability to get driver's licenses and also have our elections done on time. We should be okay. That's how we tried to think about that, though. But of course, it is really important that we actually get a budget passed so that, you know, money can be appropriately spent on this commission to make sure that it's done the right way.
Okay. What committee or what group is with the one to be that will be addressing that budget?
The legislature.
The legislature body. Okay. So there's not a separate, yeah. Is it like a committee that's been assigned to that task or certain?
I think there is, yeah, a budgetary committee, but ultimately everybody has to vote on it. And I believe the governor has to approve it.
Too. Oh, okay. All right. Now, you said the commission will go into effect January the 2020, correct?
Yep. January 1st of 2020, the applications will be made available for people to start applying.
Okay.
And then by July, the final commissioners will be chosen. And then they'll really spend that time as well as the majority of 2021 going across the state, listening to people and communities to then start drawing these lines.
Okay. Can you anticipate what the agenda of that first meeting will be about?
Of the commission?
Yes.
Yeah, so the commission will have to decide, like, rules and procedures. So one of the ways that they will pass their final maps is at least two Democrats, two Republicans, and two independents all have to agree on whatever that, you know, criteria
Okay.
And so my guess would be their first commission meeting is probably going to be talking about those different procedures. They're going to have to hire expertise and staff. And what we saw in other states is they made, you know, self-rules following a similar pattern where, like, they'd want two Democrats, two Republicans, two independents to all agree on whatever consultant they have or something like that.
All right. Now, and just as a refresher course, if there happens to be, all right, there's two questions in one. If I remember the process, the commission is set up so that you won't get a stalemate kind of a thing where, you know, mm-hmm. they had to go into, you know, we could not agree, that kind of a thing. Am I correct mm-hmm. on that?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. And explain that to our listening audience just to refresh, you know, because, you know, it's like after the fanfare, we had to go back now. Okay, now what we're talking about?
Okay. Yeah. Well, the commission really has to follow some strict criteria that tell them how these lines have to be drawn. But there is some discretion within that, especially when you're listening to different community testimony.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at least two of the Democrats, two of the Republicans, two of the independents will need to agree on a final map. If for some reason they are having a stalemate or, you know, that doesn't happen, there's a process called ranked choice voting that they will use where they'll take all of the final map options, because, like, one of them's got to be it, and they'll actually rank in order of their preference which one they like, you know, the best, which one they like second best, third best, fourth best.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, all of those numbers on, you know, who is everybody's number one, everybody's number two, and number three helps create a process of elimination to figure out where the consensus is around maps.
Okay.
So that you would still get that buy-in from everybody and find, you know, the best map. But what we've seen in all the other states that have these commissions is because these people are not politicians,
all
because
right.
they are there doing their civic duty, you know, they've been listening to communities across the whole state for like over a year. They really see it as their job to deliver this result, and we've actually never seen a stalemate happen in any other state, although we do have the backup.
All right, now the next question, there were about like five or six other states, and I'm sorry, I'm not remembering the exact number, but the voters not politicians was approved on all of those states.
Yeah, so for the 2018 election, Michigan, Missouri, Colorado, and Utah all decided to make it, yeah, so that politicians are no longer drawing these lines, and that either a commission is or a computer algorithm, but basically they're moving that power so that hopefully we can eliminate gerrymandering.
All right. Are there some sort of distinctions between the different states, as you know, because of how they're a proposal was written or how their state is set up that is unique and distinctive from what we're going through?
Yeah. So each state did craft a policy that really reflected their own. For example, in Missouri, they are using kind of a panel of people, but with a nonpartisan computer algorithm that mm-hmm. will, you know, be based on some independent criteria that will help decide these maps, where ours is more, although computers will be used, it's includes a lot more public testimony and public participation
okay.
for people to be able to come and comment and talk about their own community. In Utah, you know, they have a lot less, smaller population. So theirs is a little bit different. I think also in Missouri, I believe they only passed it for their congressional line, so they still maybe need to do their in-state lines, or I might have that mixed up, but those
okay.
are kind of the differences.
Okay. Now, but you also touched on another question that I had. It was that now that, you know, we've got the proposal, we've got the commission, how would the voters, you know, the person there or they're on the front line, if you will, how are they going to participate in it? And as you were sharing about the different states, I understand you said something about public meetings and that type of thing. Is that how?
Yeah. So anybody who's a registered voter, as long as, again, they aren't disqualified from being a, you know, elected partisan politician, a lobbyist closely related to them, there's a couple other things, can actually apply to be on the commission. So that's the first way you can participate is, you know, you can actually put your name in the hat to be one of these commissioners.
Okay.
Another way is these commissioners are required to have all open meetings, and they're also required to have at least 10 meetings before they even start drawing these maps across the state. So they have to go travel, and basically their job is to listen, to listen to people on, you know, why would they, how do they want these lines being drawn? And that's a big part with public participation. So you making sure that whatever that closest meeting is, you can show up and give testimony to say, like, why and how you would define your community so that you want that representation in Lansing and in Washington, D.C. Another thing is, because this commission will have to operate in a completely transparent way, it's very likely that their meetings will be posted online. They'll be taking public comment online. So people can also, you know, if they have access to a computer, log online, watch these meetings, send comments, and the commissioners will have to respond to those too, which is another way that they can participate. Any maps that the commission draws, they have to make public. So, you know, if you feel like something fishy is going on, you can go in and you can look at those maps and see, you know, what the conversation is, when right now all that's done behind closed doors. You have no idea what's being said or why these lines are being drawn the way they are.
Okay. And you were, you know, you were also touching base. You kind of like anticipating my questions over here. And I feel like she's getting ahead of me. But, you know, looking at the political lines and that type of thing, is there a room for the independent voter and their opinions?
Yeah. So for the commissioner, the initial even makeup of it will be 13 members. Four of those are from the majority party, four from the minority, and then five are from independent or third party voters. So what that will most likely look like in 2020 is four Democrats, four Republicans, and five independent or third party voters who are actually on this commission.
Okay.
And another big part is, with how these lines will be drawn, we actually make it illegal for them to be drawn based on trying to benefit one political party over another, which I think really helps independent voters because they can go and talk about more how they want those lines to be drawn based on their community and how and the issues that are important to them. So let's say you're really concerned about the water in your community. Well, you probably want to make sure that, you know, all of your neighbors that share your same water source are in one district so that your state representative is actually listening to your concerns instead of them having to listen to 20 different communities, which is with these crazy lines how communities are carved up right now.
All right. Now, and I may be kind of going up our field. You know, we recently, you know, we had this thing with the Flint crisis, and there was a lot of input, you know, finger pointing that, you know, at, you didn't do your job, you didn't do your job, that kind of a thing. Will those kind of issues be part of what the commissions will be addressing, or is that something that is still back with the voters in this another venue altogether?
Do you mean for like the accountability piece or like the concerns around?
I would say both. But and if so, you know, how both. How you know, yes or no to each one of those questions.
Got it. Okay, yeah. So when it comes to like accountability in government, I think that this, although it won't 100% fix it, I think it sets a really good tone and example of how government could be run.
Okay.
Because this commission will actually do everything out in the open. You know, a big part with the Flint water crisis was there are hidden emails. There are people making decisions and talking about things completely private and then hiding that information. We are the voters and the taxpayers of this state. You know, we should be able to see what's going on, have responsiveness, and therefore have some accountability. This commission will operate completely transparent. Like any email they send will be made public probably instantly. And so I think like by changing how that looks, and thankfully we were able to because the voters voted to put this into place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that will hopefully show people that there is a different way of doing things. And also I think the court of public opinion will help hold those commissioners accountable. When it comes to things like concerns about your community, let's say, you know, you are from Flint and those are one of your top concerns is like, you know, the fact that nobody still is taking accountability or that, you know, you want to make sure that this actually gets fixed. You know, Flint is a gerrymandered community, just like, you know, all the other ones in Michigan.
Right.
But going and making sure that when you're going to these public meetings, you're saying, you know, here's how I would define my community. Here are our concerns. We want to make sure that they get heard. That commission would probably take that information and try and make sure that with the level of decision making where that's actually impacted, so probably like a state house and a state senate level, that community is actually kept together.
Mm-hmm.
So that when they do stand up and use their collective voice, they have somebody listening who's actually going to fight for them in Lansing.
All right. Another entity that was in existence, the Voting Rights Act. How will the commission, the new commission, impact the Voting Rights Act, or does the Voting Rights Act impact the commission?
Yeah, so the Voting Rights Act, because it's a federally mandated law, will impact the commission and its ability to draw these lines. So that was not done away with. The kind of really, I think, good thing is that with the Voting Rights Act, it basically guarantees majority and minority communities in Michigan to be able to elect somebody from their community. But how it's been abused in the past has been overly packing minorities into one district.
Okay.
You know, a majority means you only need 51% of a vote to win. And you want to still guarantee representation, but that doesn't mean that you pack in as many minorities as possible so that, you know, everybody's voting 80-90% one way, because people live in different communities and their voices deserve to be heard, and then it makes less of those voices heard in other districts, so that you're really limiting their ability to only elect one person when really maybe they could help elect two or three representatives.
All right.
Yeah, and so then this commission will need to still guarantee those majorities, but again, we'll hopefully do it in a much more thoughtful way that actually still stays and keeps the integrity of the community being represented in multiple places.
All right. So challenges to the, the commission, met, they did set up their things like that, and there's still a group that wants to challenge what the commission did or did not do. Is, could you explain that process? Let's say they came up with they came up with the maps.
Okay. Yeah. So yes, of course. So like, even though we've put in all of these safeguards, we want to make sure that these maps are done with integrity. So just like the maps right now, if somebody is still really concerned that they were done the wrong way, or maybe somebody was using bias when drawing them, which would be illegal, you could bring a lawsuit against the current set of maps, and then the courts would have to evaluate, what were the criteria that's spelled out in the Constitution followed or not. Right now, there's a lawsuit going against the current way maps are drawn, which is by our legislators. You know, there's emails that have been leaked out where they even directly said they're trying to, cram all of one party's garbage into one district over another. It was very unsettling, I think. And that's where, again, what we see in other states that have passed something similar to what we passed in Michigan is, although, some people will probably still try and bring a lawsuit because they're just going to be mad that, like, their party has less seats or whatever.
I want to take my ball and come home.
Yeah, exactly. That once, because this process is done out in the open, you're not discovering emails 10 years later. It's all done right there. And usually those cases are actually quickly dismissed, and it ends up saving the state money because it's actually done in a fair way. It's just people being upset that, they want to take their ball and go home and try and stop it because they're used to being able to manipulate it themselves.
All right. Okay. Now, is there a precedence for a commission like this? Has, some other state already had operationalized this, and how is it working?
Yeah. So one state that is a good example, I think, is Arizona and California. So what they have is a chair who really helps run the meetings when they have the meetings, but they actually rotate that chair, and then they often have a vice chair. So normally what they'll do is they'll have, one of the political parties, let's say the Democrat, be the chair, and then the Republican will be the vice chair. And every meeting, or every month, I think, maybe they'll switch, actually, like, who's that next one? So maybe the Republican becomes the chair, and then an independent member becomes the vice chair. And that's one way. Soon, I bet 2020 will be here before we know it. So hurdles when you're trying, but it's not impossible when you can work together. And we want to hopefully make it easier for the people who come after us wanting to, create whatever change they want to see in the world.
Do you also see yourself, your group, as a organization that will, show people how, and I think you kind of said it in your answer just now, that how us, one person, one idea, one small group can make a difference. Do you see yourself as part of getting that message to the general population in general? So, that's a lesson I think that if anything else that came out of this election is that, an interest group that saw a need and you started to apply yourself. What were some of the, how did you go about it? What were some of the challenges, So do you see your group getting involved in something like that?
Yeah, we've had the really exciting part about, being an organization that started from a Facebook post and then was really run by like thousands of regular people is we did get highlighted, and we even got some national press. So we've had a lot of people who've read about us or heard about us actually reach out saying, in their state, they want to try and end gerrymandering, or they have a different issue they're passionate about and they want to know how we did it. And I think we all took it as a really big responsibility to pay it forward and to help people navigate those challenges. It's always going to be different in a different state with a different issue. Mm-hmm. But I think there are some things that we learned that can be applied and hopefully helpful to others. We created a big training network, a lot of like materials on how to gather petitions. We cut 6,000 clipboards, and any of those ways that we can try and just be helpful. It was really hard to create all of that from scratch. And I think part of our motivation, even while we were doing it, was, knowing that we could hopefully make it easier for the people who come next.
Yes. And I noticed that at least the Dearborn League of Women Voters were supportive of you during this venture.
Yeah, they were very supportive.
Okay. Do you see continuing collaborative efforts with them in particular?
Yeah, you know, I really anticipate that. I'm pretty sure the league is planning on doing some census work, although you want to check directly with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the really key part to being able to reach people across the state in all different types of communities between now and 2020 to make sure that they apply for this commission, but also that people want to participate in these meetings, will be working with a really expansive coalition of different groups who get the word out and let people know about these opportunities, but who also can, you know, help educate and reach more people than we could on our own.
All right. Katie, is there anything that I left out or that you think is really important for the people and the listeners to know about?
I'm trying to think. No, I think, I mean, if people want to stay updated on, you know, I'm sure the Secretary of State's website will eventually have information about the commission and when applications will be coming out, but voters, not politicians, for sure will. We have an email, you know, update list where if anything happens in the courts or anything happens with deadlines, we let people know. So, it is a brand new process. It isn't tomorrow, but it is going to be soon. I bet 2020 will be here before we know it. So,
yes, indeed.
Yeah. So we're happy to help, you know, guide people that way. And we need help. We need you making sure your community is going to be represented no matter where you live.
Okay. All right. One thing I did not address, although we kind of like, you know, touched base with it. How much of a impact did social media play in this campaign?
Yeah, you know, I think it played a really big aspect, especially when we were first organizing. You know, we didn't have a bank account, we didn't have money, so we certainly didn't have an office, printers, anything like that. And organizing online became really key. A big thing, too, is, you know, like when you're in a company or an organization, you can set up new systems and work with, like, you know, like a Microsoft system or whatever, but that's not, like, really accessible for a lot of people. And so being able to use a platform people use every day, like a Facebook or a Twitter or an Instagram, I think was really key to being able to keep people comfortable with figuring out how can they be activists, you know, not having to, like, make people go out on a brand new platform or something. I think continue to do that. And it also helped create a sense of community where, you know, maybe there weren't a lot of other volunteers in your part of the state, but you could see that there were, you know, hundreds and then thousands of people working in other parts of the state just as hard as you were working here in your spot. I think that was just motivating. It was cool to see how many thoughtful people were who are in Michigan, but also who are, like, you know, doing the grind every day just like you were.
All right. How much time was invested in your social media? You know, was it a part of your campaign strategy, or did it, you know, or was this a part of like an ongoing blog kind of thing? What kinds of things were going on with your social media effort?
Yeah, I mean, eventually we could pay to help at least do like some advertising, because that is another good part about social media. You can reach different audiences and do a lot of targeting that way. But because we use it as our main platform for communicating, especially internally, I think a lot of us helped at the upkeep. We had on Facebook in particular, like a private group where we would discuss a lot of stuff, and we had different committees which would then have, you know, their own groups so that they could keep track of the conversations. And then, you know, we had to be careful, though. We had to lay down some rules because we are nonpartisan and people are very passionate, especially about the president, whether they like him or don't like him. And so we really wanted to make it a space where anybody could feel comfortable. And so we had to monitor that. We would have different volunteers who helped, you know, remind people that, you know, what they were saying was a little partisan and that, like, that's probably best for outside of the group and they're allowed to have those opinions. But in this group, we really wanted to focus on how we come together, even though we have differences.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we always tried to encourage people too, you know, when we were doing goals or, you know, we'd have a goal like, you know, we want everybody to go do a door knocking shift today. We'd ask people to post pictures because then you are, again, like, seeing other people doing it. And sometimes it encourages you to want to go out there.
All right. Now, Facebook, no, I'm sorry, your social media presence is most prominent where?
Yeah, Facebook, at Voters Not Politicians. We're also on Twitter, which is, our handle is @NotPoliticians. And we have a good Instagram page, too, which is Voters Not Politicians.
All right, so I'm going to ask you to repeat that a little bit slower so people who are listening will might want to kind of like, you know, that might be their way of connecting with you. So repeat again your media contact information.
Yeah, so for Facebook, it's Voters Not Politicians. That's our public page. on Twitter. Our handle is @notpoliticians. And on Instagram, we can be found through Voters Not Politicians.
All right. Are there blogs involved in that as well?
We do have a blog, yeah. So if you go to our website, which is votersnotpoliticians.com or VNP for votersnotpoliticians.vote, so VNP.vote or votersnotpoliticians.com, we have a blog linked right off of the main page of that.
All right. And just in case we haven't gotten everything, if all of the above, they didn't, how would they get in touch with Voters Not Politicians again? Is there a telephone number?
Yes.
And slowly?
Yeah.
Slow down,
Kate. Oh, yeah. Well, probably the best way would be our website at votersnotpoliticians.com, or you can email us at info@votersnotpoliticians.com.
Okay. Does the Voters Not Politician have a time when they meet outside, you know, where the people can do a, you know, put a body to that face and they can be, you know, interact with you at some time, at that point?
Yeah, we have local meetings as necessary across the state, as well as statewide conference calls. The best way to get connected really is through signing up on our website. If you sign up to volunteer, we'll connect you with a local team that can let you know what their meeting schedule is.
Okay. All right. Well, Katie, I want to thank you very much for your input and for your father. And you still got the same enthusiasm after the elections. Did you go to sleep?
Feels good that we won, too, I think. I think that makes it easier.
Did you sleep for a week after the elections?
I actually just got back from a 2-week vacation where I only actually got to take vacation like 7 of the days, but that was still better than none. So.
Oh, and another aside, how has this venture changed your, you know, you had a life before Voters Not Politicians. How has that life been impacted by that, by what you've been going through?
I mean, I used to be in the recycling industry. So I think for starters, I somehow wound up in politics, even though I don't like politics. But honestly, you know, I think, like 2 years ago when I was looking at Michigan, I kind of wanted to move out of the state. I didn't feel like it was headed in a direction that supported young people. And I didn't really feel like, you know, people shared my same values. And then over the last 2 years, I've just gotten to meet so many amazing people who, you know, spent their time trying to make the world better for 2 years. And I think if anything, I've just never felt, you know, better about the state of things and just knowing how impactful people power really can be. It was super inspiring. And I think I just have like a much like brighter perspective on like what we can really do to try and make things better.
All right. Voters Not Politicians, you are a nonprofit, correct?
Yeah, we're a 501c3 and a C4.
Okay. And is that something that came about as you got into this, or was that you how you started out beforehand?
Yeah, so when you're doing a ballot initiative in Michigan, before you raise over $500, you have to file a ballot question committee. So we actually started as a ballot question committee, but that makes only your treasurer legally liable for everything, which was me. So we quickly became a C4 so that we could offer that protection. And then as we really were looking at all the education work that we have to do and want to do post-election, that's when we created our C3 as well, so that we could really have that focus on making sure the word gets out.
And so this is Betty Daniels from Impact from 4th Tuesday, thanking Katie from Voters Not Politicians, and look forward to seeing you again.